From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. At midnight, the General Assembly will adjourn sine die, essentially for good, this year. Collectively, the legislators have accomplished a lot of what they set out to do. They've passed a budget, banned hydraulic fracturing or fracking with Governor Hogan's support, and mandated paid sick leave for workers in companies bigger than 15 employees. That could still draw a veto. Democrats engineered a raft of measures to push back against President Trump's agenda, including a bill that would require the state to make up the difference if federal funds are cut for Planned Parenthood, and authorizing the state attorney general to sue the Trump administration. WIPR Statehouse reporter Rachel Bay and longtime political commentator Barry Raskovar join us to discuss what passed, what failed, and what might pop up again in 2018 and election year. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. 14 hours and 26 minutes. Whatever the General Assembly doesn't get done by midnight is not going to get done in 2017. They're still trying to work out deals on legislation to increase the number of licenses to grow medical marijuana, to give a tax break to manufacturers, and to limit personal information about customers that internet service providers can sell. But already legislators have done a lot. We're going to talk about the done and the undone. Joining us by phone from Annapolis is WIPR Statehouse reporter Rachel Bay. Morning, Rachel.
I'm here.
Great. Here in the studio with me is longtime political commentator Barry Raskovar, formerly of the Baltimore Sun. He writes for the blog Political Maryland. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Sheila. It's nice to be here.
Rachel, for what are we going to remember this session of the General Assembly? What is the headline?
Probably one of the headlines, at least, would be the number of measures that have been targeting federal politics, federal congressional actions or actions by President Trump. So there have been things such as the bill that protects funding for Planned Parenthood in Maryland should federal funding be cut. There are things such as the powers that were granted to the state attorney general so that he can challenge federal legislation. And there were a number of these that really were specifically targeted at the Trump administration. And I think that's one of the overarching themes this year.
Barry, what is your take?
Yeah, this has been one of the more unusual General Assembly sessions that I've witnessed.
Really?
Yes. Normally in a legislative session in Maryland, the governor takes the lead. The governor, in his State of the State address, rolls out an agenda. And that's the basis on which the legislature then works. And the success or failure of the legislative session is determined by how much of that agenda is accomplished. That's no longer the case. This legislature, a Democratic-controlled legislature, has in fact separated itself from the governor and is now much more proactive. And Governor Larry Hogan is much more passive in the legislative process. The result is that, the question you asked, what's the headline for this legislative session? For Governor Hogan, it's hard to say because there was so little that he put on the table and even less that he was able to achieve. I mean, his number one goal was to try to eliminate what he called the roadkill bill that he claimed would freeze all highway construction going forward. In fact, the attorney general analyzed it and said it would do no such thing. It was a fight over very little, and Hogan did not get what he wanted. So his number one objective wasn't achieved. What else did he get? Not much. On the legislative side, there were a whole batch of important social legislation that was achieved, but nothing really major. So if you're looking for a front page headline, it's hard to find one in these 90 days.
You mentioned that Governor Hogan began the session pointing to the roadkill bill. He also pointed, as he has, I really think, since he took office, trying to curb mandated spending, trying to limit the legislature's power to mandate what spending in future years, if not the current year, because he has enormous power to set the budget for the current year. Rachel Bay, did Governor Hogan make any progress on fewer mandates, less money mandated by the legislature?
Not really. And in fact, one of the clear things that we saw, so this year we saw, because of the budget deficit, we saw a budget reconciliation bill that kind of accompanies the budget. So Governor Hogan, to fill the deficit, actually tried at the beginning of the session in his budget to cut funding for several programs that contained mandated funding that were passed last year. So things like, for example, the legislature tried to extend the Baltimore City Public Library hours, and the funding for that was mandated by the legislature last year. Governor Hogan cut those funds when he submitted the budget this year. And then what we saw was actually the legislature still wielding a lot of power in this regard, because the Appropriations Committee was able to put that funding back in and kind of move money around so that they were still able to meet the budget goals, but they were ended up cutting some of the programs that Governor Hogan wanted to see, such as the school voucher program, and most of the funding for the school voucher program, I should say, and then putting money back in for those mandated programs that Governor Hogan tried to cut.
That's WIPR State House reporter Rachel Bay here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Here with me in the studio is political commentator Barry Raskovar. We're talking about what the General Assembly accomplished in the session that will wrap up at midnight tonight. Barry, quite a few bills that I think the governor was expected to veto, he has let become law without his veto. Is that part of the trend that you're observing?
Yes. I think it was a recognition that there is no way that the governor was going to win the fight, and that he did not want to see a headline at the end of the legislative session, legislature overrides a dozen Hogan vetoes. He ended up vetoing one bill that he decided to take a stand on, and that's the Protect Our Schools Act, as it was called.
Yeah, Rachel, tell us what the Protect Our Schools Act did and what the governor said it would do and what the legislature said, no, it won't.
Yeah, so this legislation was heavily backed by the Maryland State Education Association, the teachers union, and what it does is it sets some parameters for how the state implements the federal education law, the Every Student Succeeds Act. And specifically, it sets some rules for how the state determines which schools are considered to be failing schools, and then how those schools are reformed and turned around, and kind of limits the state Board of Education's ability to do things that the advocates for the bill claimed were privatization-minded reforms. And so the legislature, so the governor, of course, disagreed with this, said that this bill basically limits accountability for the schools. But in any case, he vetoed it. The legislature overrode the veto. So that's where that one stands.
And this is I think, a very important and symbolic bill and the fight over it. As Rachel was saying, this legislative session had much to do with a Democratic legislature fearing what the Trump administration in Washington and conservative Republicans in Congress might enact that would hurt the state or change the direction of programs that they'd put in place. So this Protect Our Schools Act was a defensive measure, basically to block Hogan and his school board appointees on the state level from being able to essentially dictate what local school boards in the counties in Baltimore City can do about failing schools and not do. It would have opened the door wider for charter schools as a replacement for public schools. It would allow for a takeover of failing schools by the state, even though the state doesn't have the infrastructure or the expertise to do that. So this was a reversal of form, if you will, in which you had Democrats defending local autonomy, whereas Hogan and Education Secretary Betsy DeVos on the federal level are really going in the opposite direction, wanting more state control and even federal control of what happens in local schools. So it was a very interesting development on that perspective, but it also showed the alienation between a Republican governor, Larry Hogan, and the Democratic legislature.
But Rachel Bay, Governor Hogan signed the ban on fracking, which I think was a surprise to some people. What was the dynamic behind that?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, it's first of all important to note that the Maryland contains, sits on roughly 2% of the Marcellus Shale plate. And it was more or less determined that there was very limited viability for fracking in the state to begin with. So kind of setting that up, Governor Hogan, what he said was that, you know, it's become increasingly clear that fracking is something that cannot be done safely, and that he has been a proponent of fracking only if it can be done safely. And when it became clear to him that it cannot be done safely, he said he announced his support for an outright ban, which of course changed the dynamics in the legislature for them to pass the ban that had been proposed by Senator Bobby Zirkin. So that's what they said. It is important to remember that, again, this is something that would affect really primarily Garrett County, some parts of Allegheny County in Western Maryland. And again, there's some limited viability for fracking, even if it were to be legalized. So it's unclear how much economic impact a ban or lack thereof would have.
One of the odd things here on the fracking issue is that it was Governor Hogan's own environmental department that came up with a whole new set of rules and regulations on how you control fracking if it were to occur in Maryland. And it was billed as the toughest set of regulations in the nation. And that some oil company executives were saying it was so tough, they may never come into Maryland anyway. And then at the last minute, this year, the governor reverses course and says, I'm going to sign the fracking bill. I never thought it was safe to begin with. It really comes across more as a political move that...
Shocking.
Just absolutely shocking. But that's largely the story of Governor Hogan in his 2.5 years in office so far. Politics usually advances a lot quicker than policy in the Hogan administration.
And we are facing elections next year. We need to take a quick break now. And when we come back, more on what legislators are still grappling with. I'm Sheila Cast. Rachel Bay and Barry Raskavar will stick with us. You should, too. We'll be right back.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Today is sine die, essentially for good. No tomorrow. Whatever Maryland's legislators don't act on by midnight will be left undone. With me to reflect on what passed and what died and what may show up again next year are WIPR Statehouse reporter Rachel Bay and political commentator Barry Raskavar of the blog Political Maryland. Where are they, Rachel, on paid sick leave? Both the Democratic legislature and the governor had proposals. Have they split the difference, or what's going on?
Yeah, not so much. So paid sick leave has passed. Paid sick leave has passed. The Democrats' version of the sick leave bill which affects businesses with at least 15 employees, has passed. It won't go to the governor until after the General Assembly session is over, but when it does, Governor Hogan has said that he will veto it. He himself proposed a version of sick leave that would have affected much larger businesses, those with 50 employees or more, and he says that the one that affects smaller businesses is irresponsible and is overly burdensome to businesses, and so he's planning to veto it. But it does look like the General Assembly chambers will have enough votes to override that veto when it comes up next year in the 2018 General Assembly session.
And another business bill, they are still trying to work out some kind of a tax break for manufacturers, correct, Rachel?
Yeah, so this one, it's not totally clear, honestly, where it's going to end up. This is something that last year, Governor Hogan proposed, and it didn't get anywhere because the legislative leaders said that the main issue with this proposal is that it would benefit new manufacturers coming into certain areas of the state, but it would not benefit the manufacturers who are already in those areas, so Baltimore City, parts of the Eastern Shore, and parts of Western Maryland. So it looks like my guess is that that bill won't make it past the midnight deadline tonight. But anything can happen on Signy Die.
Yeah, that's true. And many things have happened. Barry Raskovar, one of the issues before them is yet another bill pertaining to medical marijuana. It's had a hard road to go in the legislature.
Extremely rocky road.
What are they fighting about now?
They're fighting about how many additional licenses for growers of medical marijuana would be allocated. This is as a result of protests by the Black Caucus that there weren't enough minority licenses granted to minority companies. In fact, a number of the companies that were granted the licenses have a significant minority ownership, but it's not a majority of those companies. But these would be licenses that would almost be targeted toward minority groups that want to grow marijuana in Maryland. The question is, how many to allow? In a large sense, it's an enrichment bill for those who get it, because if Maryland follows the direction in which Colorado has gone, marijuana growing and the sale of medical marijuana drugs is going to be a big business and a very profitable business in Maryland over the next few decades.
Except we're hearing right now from the U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions exactly the opposite point of view. He wants pretty much to put it back in the box.
Yes. Here we go again. Washington, the Trump administration, you have Health Secretary Tom Price being no friend of medical marijuana either. So you may well have the federal government stepping in and trying to stop this new business from taking off. Meanwhile, people who are suffering from very painful cancers and other illnesses who really could benefit from medical marijuana can't get it in Maryland, which is the real shame of it all, that politics has, and the whole nature of the business of marijuana has gotten in the way of providing it for people who are sick and in need relief from pain.
That's political commentator Barry Raskovar here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. With us by phone is WIPR State House reporter Rachel Bay. We're talking about the General Assembly, what it's done, what it still is trying to do. I want to loop back to the pushback against Trump policies where you started us, Rachel. Part of that, it strikes me, is that pretty big expansion of the powers of Attorney General Brian Frosch. Tell us about what extra authorities and budget the legislature has given him and why.
So Maryland is one of a few states where the state attorney general didn't initially have effectively the power to go after lawsuits challenging federal policy without buy-in from either the legislature or the governor. So on a case-by-case basis, he was supposed to go to Governor Hogan and say, I want to bring this particular challenge. And the General Assembly passed first a joint resolution, which Governor Hogan doesn't have a chance to veto, expanding those powers so that he can bring challenges against federal policy when he deems it to be the right move. And then they've also subsequently passed a bill that Governor Hogan allowed to become law without his signature, which gives the Attorney General, starting two fiscal years from now, to $1 million a year so that he can hire five new attorneys to help him bring those challenges. And Brian Frost, the state attorney general, has already begun to use these new powers. He has, for example, brought a challenge or joined a challenge against the president's immigration ban, for example. And there are others that he has taken or that he is considering pursuing already.
I should disclose that my husband, Jim Rosapep, who represents Prince George's and Anne Arundel in the state Senate, has worked on some of those Trump pushback bills. And Barry Rascivar, I get backfilling the budgets for Meals on Wheels and Planned Parenthood. I get the state commits if federal funding goes away, Maryland will step up. That's clear to me. Do you have a sense of what these commissions to watchdog health insurance or financial protections, is this window dressing or can they do something?
Well, it's not window dressing. It's more like sounding the alarm. If there are clear indications that major federal budget cuts are coming Maryland's way, and I think that's going to be one of the pivotal issues in the 2018 General Assembly session. The budget. Clearly, the Trump administration and Republicans in Washington want a smaller federal budget. How does that impact on Maryland's social programs and other programs, Chesapeake Bay programs, for instance? The Trump budget that he came out with had no money in there to help clean up the Chesapeake Bay. What do we do about that? The Environmental Protection Agency, there are proposals within the Trump administration for massive cutbacks in employees and in programs for the EPA. Many of those people live in Maryland or Virginia. If they lose their jobs, that means the amount of tax money coming into the state of Maryland is going to shrink. And what do you do if the unemployment rate starts to rise? How does the governor handle this? How does a Democratic legislature handle this in an election year in Maryland? So I think, going forward, watch what's happening in Washington and how that impacts in Maryland.
Rachel Bay, what issues do you see being teed up for the next legislative session?
Well, I've already mentioned sick leave, which we probably will see a veto override of next year. And yeah, as Barry mentioned, you do have all of these commissions watching what various components of the federal government are going to be doing. And I think those commissions could start to see some of those actions being taken next year. And then some of what we see next year, honestly, will depend on what doesn't make it past that midnight deadline. So, for example, one of the issues that might come back, bail reform, which we haven't really talked about, is likely to die in a House committee. So this is something that could, but the Senate has already passed, so it's something that could come back in a subsequent year, and legislators could try again with a different form of negotiation.
Right. This is the bill that would have essentially put money bail, bail that costs a defendant has to post bond with a bail bondsman. The Court of Appeals had said judges should minimize that. This legislation would have said no, the judges should look at that as well as other things. What's going to happen is the Court of Appeals rules are going to stay in place, and the legislature can come back next year and say, is it working?
Yes.
Right, exactly.
Yes, and the bail bond industry is pushing as hard as it can, and it has a lot of power in Annapolis, to overturn these Court of Appeals rules, because it means a severe loss in revenue for the bail bond industry.
Right.
It may put some of these people out of business.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're almost out of time, and I've learned a lot in this conversation. I'm grateful to you both. Barry Raskovar blogs at Political Maryland, politicalmaryland.com, and WIPR State House reporter Rachel Bay. Thank you. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. I thank you for listening. Legislators will take time for a Passover Seder this evening if you're celebrating Passover. Blessings.